interrupt the regular program schedule to bring you the following special report.
Now for something more serious. She's the narrator of the whole film. Listen to her in this scene. Listen to her own uncertainty about what to do next. The movie was directed by a brilliant young filmmaker named Terrence Malick, and it's a masterpiece.
Take you away to a Star Wars, and I...
The whole movie is that beautiful. And it's the story of how people can get cornered, how they can become overcome by desperation, poverty. Oh no, not another soap opera on the plains or something, but nature is so big and so overwhelming. The sky is so big. Her sad voice, it's got an infinitely weary wisdom.
Make you forget you're in a movie seat, totally different world. In a way, this picture is as strange and as foreign with its photography and sounds as I really think it's very beautiful. The voice, I don't know, maybe it's a little too much ain't the working class really smarter than the so-called smart guys, but my God, what a film to take us away from movies.
The story just seems to... And what a great, the plains are so wide, that voice she has, it's unforgettable. And I love that scene, it's to fit into that and as its own kind of little rural tragedy.
It's sort of a hopeless story, though, too. Felt sad. And we both, you know what I like about this picture is something that the movies can do so well when they're really good, and that is...
Junk food supper.
All right, welcome to Junk Food Supper, the weekly-ish podcast where me, Sean Byron, and my co-host Parker Bowman attempt to approximate the full junk food dinner experience. And by that, I mean, we will be reviewing one movie tonight rather than three. There will be no Kevin, but maybe some drops of Kevin. And before that, we'll have some kind of a little discussion, which I think we actually did reveal at the end of last week's episode. So I'll go ahead and reveal it again now, which is we'll be talking about this short film, The Great American Mud Wrestle, which was kind of inspired by our discussion of local weirdos. And we noticed that one of my local weirdo picks, this guy, the Crenshaw Cowboy, was in a short film. So we decided, hey, let's talk about that next week. But before we talk about any of that, I got to do it. I feel obligated. I got to ask him, how are you doing, Parker Bowman?
I'm doing good. It's been a fun week. I went out and talked to some of the best surfers in the world. These guys, you know, these surfers.
Oh, really? Did you talk to any teens confronting their fears?
I talked to them as well. Yes. Now I went out to the surf ranch here, which is like this little spot tucked away in the middle of like rural Kings County in the Central Valley.
Let's give proper credit. It's the Kelly Slater Surf Ranch. Yes. We all know this. I think he deserves the respect.
That's true. He built it. Literally, he built it. It's his thing.
Yeah.
And he was there. He's a nice fellow.
I said
like two words to him. Yeah. He was. I went to the press conference before the big kickoff of the event. I said, "Hello, sir. How are you?" He said, "I'm good." I said, "All right. Good day to you."
Man, that is a celebrity sighting right there.
Indeed. And there was like a big event out there. Competition. People came in from all over the world. Australians were there. I was rooting for the Australians because I know we have at least one Australian listener, maybe two.
So I think there's two, but I feel like the guy that's not Tom hasn't called in for a long time.
Yeah. So I was rooting for them. As far as I know, we have no Brazilian listeners, so I was not rooting for the Brazilians at the competition. But yeah, it was a fun event. It's like crazy that just like amongst all these like almond trees, there's just like this huge man-made surf machine where all these wonderful surfers were doing tricks and wheelies and flips and ollies, north side grinds, nollies, things like that.
A Christ air, perhaps.
Mm-hmm, they were doing that. So yeah, it was fun. Very hot though.
I feel like it's pretty good timing, though, that they had this event right now, the only time within the past decade at which it might even seem remotely appropriate to have this much water wasted in the Central Valley of California.
Yeah. Well, they assure me that, like, the way they do it is sustainable in terms of water. That's like a big selling point to them, is that somehow they figured out a way that it doesn't waste water. But
and the orcas love performing at SeaWorld.
I don't know the science behind it. I mean, it seems like any use of water that isn't like hydrating dying people in the Central Valley at this point is like a bad use of it. But because everybody's wells are just tapped dry. Nobody can take baths anymore.
But to be fair, you couldn't expect these people to drive another 60 minutes out towards the ocean where there's plenty of surfing spots. I mean, maybe the most famous coastline for surfing in the world. Just, you know, let's stay in the Central Valley.
Well, there's sharks out there. Everybody's afraid of sharks. That was their other big selling point, is this is a place where you can surf without being eaten by a shark. And I'm all for that.
That was the selling point in Jaws 3D as well, if you remember. And we all remember how that turned out.
It was a tragedy.
Yeah. I think that was set at the Kelly Slater Surf Ranch in the Central Valley, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. Way back in 1984 when it first opened.
It is a cool like environment, though, from what I saw from your photos. I was like, man, that is, even if it is, I mean, on the surface, it seems pretty silly to me that they would even make this. Like, it just seems so, I don't know, it seems like you're thumbing your nose at God almost to be like, yeah, we're going to turn the driest place in the country into this surf oasis. But I think it's cool. I don't know. I like that kind of nose thumbing at God.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I like hubris. I like that in my skaters.
Yeah, exactly.
And aesthetically, it's pleasing. Like they really lean into it being the Central Valley. So there's like old like tractors and like ag equipment like everywhere as like decoration and stuff. So I think it's like an interesting place to walk around.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a pretty fun event that you got to go to.
Indeed. The one pleasure and perk of working at my job is that once every 2 years I get to go out to the surf ranch. But how about you? Did you get into anything fun?
No surf ranches this week. I mean, maybe next week. We'll see. I watched a few things. I watched Jurassic World Dominion, the latest Jurassic World, which was very bad. But it did prompt me to watch a movie called Brighton Rock from 1947, starring Richard Attenborough, just kind of going through his stuff on Letterboxd, and it looked good, and I saw it was on Canopy. Very good. It's like a pretty ruthless film noir from England from 47, where a lot of people get their faces slashed up. So I would recommend that if you got Canopy. And then I checked out Too Old to Die Young, the Nick Reffin show on Amazon, which came out a few years ago, and I've been kind of like waiting to watch it because it seems like a big investment of time. Like, I think it's about 10 episodes and each one is roughly 90 minutes. And I watched that first episode and it was very strange. It's kind of like a Twin Peaks sort of a show, I think, both in some of its thematic content, but especially just in like the tone and like these really long, awkward pauses that are everywhere. I liked it, but I think it probably is, you know, very divisive. I'm sure that most people would be turned off by these scenes where people will speak like three words in like a 5 minute scene and just kind of stare at each other while like there's like foreboding techno music in the background and neon signs, you know, blinking behind them. Have you seen that show at all? You know about it?
I have not. I've heard things about it, but it sounds like all of his other stuff from your description. So I feel like I've seen it.
Well, it's basically like his movies, but slowed down to like 1 out of 10 speed. You know what I mean? Like he's taken like what feels like is going to be enough plot to fill up one of his films, and he's stretched it across 10 episodes that are 90 minutes each. So we'll see how it goes. I might not last the whole way, but so far it's been interesting. And then I saw that Night of Champions.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I watched that too.
Which was kind of lame. I don't know. I like the Asuka Belair match. That was about it.
Yeah. I like that Sami Zayn looked like he was happy in life.
Sure.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
He was smiling.
That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It wasn't great. It was all right.
I think it could have been worse. You know, it was all right, but there was like two like quick squash matches and I don't know, the crowd kind of sucked and that country kind of sucks. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. I got an email at work. Maybe I shouldn't give behind the scenes goss and juice out over the airwaves, but I got an email at work asking me if I want to interview Liv Morgan of the WWE.
And your response was yes, but it's going to be in person.
I'm not sure if it'll be in person, but I think it'll have to be yes, because she's cool and she was on the Chucky show. And I just really want to talk to her about Chucky.
Didn't even know that. That's cool.
Yeah. What it was like to work with Chucky. What's he like in real life? Things like that.
Yeah. I think you should go for it, man.
Yeah.
Who would be more qualified on this planet than Parker Bowman?
Exactly. Exactly. I also got another email from the same PR firm telling me a thing about something that Corey Feldman did, but then asserting that he will not be doing interviews about it. So.
Okay.
It seemed like a real, real weird email to send out.
To a newspaper.
To a newspaper, yeah. It was like informing us that he did a podcast or something and asking us to write stories about it.
But, all right. I guess that's how news works now. And to be honest, that actually does kind of seem like how news works now.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I think, pretty much just everybody reports on things that are said on podcasts. Like most of entertainment news right now in this moment is reporting on things that Quentin Tarantino said on his podcast. Like, I feel like that's so much of like what Entertainment Weekly and Variety does right now. It's like a full-time job.
So. Yeah. And it's never anything concrete. Like these guys are not making big, well thought out announcements on podcasts. It's always a headline that seems salacious. And then you click on it and it's like, oh yeah. An offhand remark that was retracted 30 seconds later and, you know, didn't amount to anything.
Yeah. I've been seeing in a lot of the film groups I'm in on Facebook, like people have been talking about this thing that Quentin Tarantino said, where he said that like all of Ryan Reynolds's movies and like movies that are more bigger than that, movies that are released straight to streaming, like aren't part of the like cultural zeitgeist. Like they just kind of come out and nobody cares about them. And it seems like all these people are mad that he would say this, but like, that seems like the most obviously true thing anybody could ever say. Like, all this shit just comes out constantly. And like, no, like I couldn't tell you any of the seven Ryan Reynolds movies that have come out straight to Netflix. Like I couldn't tell you a single thing about them. Like nobody can.
Well, and especially now when you have so many options, it's not like back in the day, if there was a real crumb bum movie on Cinemax at 3 a.m, it still got a lot of viewers because like there were no other options. And so, you know, the quality of the movie didn't necessarily play that much into like how relevant it was versus now. I feel like, yeah, things can just come out and nobody will ever notice because everybody's so backlogged on the things that they do want to watch anyways.
Yeah. Like the Russo brothers, they did Avengers Part 3 and 4, which became like two of the top five biggest movies of all time. And they followed it up with a Ryan Reynolds. I think Ryan Reynolds was in it. A Ryan Reynolds Netflix movie, and like nobody cared. Like these are like the two biggest directors on earth, and they're coming out with this shit. And me, who I love their Avengers movies, I don't even know who's in this fucking movie. I think it's actually Ryan Gosling and not Ryan Reynolds. Who knows?
Like, I mean, that's a big Ryan though. That's no Ryan to shake a stick at.
That is true, but yeah, it's these movies come out and nobody. It's like they're all Avatar. Like they just make no cultural mark at all, even if people click play on them.
Well, so. But difference being Avatar did make money, I think. I mean,
Well, yeah, it did make some money, but nobody.
Maybe could be the box office is fabricated this whole time.
That's possible. I've still yet to meet a single person who has actually like went to the theater to see that new Avatar movie. Did you see it, right?
No, but I did see that first one once in the theater, and I didn't hate the experience of watching it. I walked away being like, all right, cool. Summer movie. But
I hated it.
Didn't love it. Yeah.
Well, what if we find out if we hate or love the Great American Mud Wrestle? Are you prepared for this? Are you ready for something like this?
I think we should. And maybe before we get into this Great American Mud Wrestle, do we want to just touch on real quick, like our own experiences with mud wrestling? Because I see the runtime for this is only 9 minutes. We're probably not going to have a ton of time to chat it up. I'm just curious if you've ever participated in mud wrestling or been a spectator to it. Have you seen it?
I have mud wrestled without the mud one time in my life. I just wrestled, I guess.
Okay. In what kind of context?
Well, I was a young man. I was like 5 or something. And my parents had friends who also had kids my age, and they came over. And I don't know why this would have been on television, but we ended up watching mud wrestling. And then we decided it would be fun to do. So we wrestled each other, but we pretended that we were like covering each other with mud before. So like we were just patting ourselves down essentially. And then we were like, we would wrestle, and then we got caught doing this while mud wrestling was on. And I feel like we all got in trouble. But I don't remember it too much. Cause I was like, I must have been no older than 6 watching mud wrestling. I don't even, what channel would this have even come on? It's crazy to me. But.
The Mud Wrestling Network, I guess.
I suppose so.
You guys had MWN over there, I guess. But I feel like if it's on the TV at the time that you get caught, there's got to be a ceiling to like how much in trouble you can get. I mean, you just point at the TV and it's like, well, you know, it was right there on the TV. What do we expect him not to copy it?
Yeah. Well, it's possible maybe the show was over and we were still wrestling. Maybe that's part of it. We had to like explain what was going on.
That was a long time ago. Yeah.
Should have recorded it. Just kept it playing on a loop just in case we got caught. But I mean, we weren't nude or anything like they would be in mud wrestling. We weren't in bikinis. We were just pretending.
Dressed provocatively, maybe.
Yeah, we were just wearing our cut-off jean shorts and bras. I mean, it's fine.
But I'll be honest, I did get some weird kind of vibes off it.
Exactly. Have you participated in mud wrestling or seen any in real life?
Well, yeah. Not mud wrestling exactly, but jello wrestling. Did your school ever do jello wrestling?
Is schools are doing this?
Yeah, well, so that was the thing that, I guess in retrospect, it seems very weird. And I think it must have been some kind of like a charity fundraiser or something, because I have no idea why this would have happened. But yeah, there was an event. I think they only did it one time that I can remember when I was in, I want to say it was my final year of junior high school, but maybe I was a freshman in high school. But either one, they did this event where, like basically after the school day was over, they set up this ring in the gym and, you know, filled it with jello. And it was not like tournament style. Instead, it was just all these individual matches that people signed up to do. So you could like wrestle your friend, I guess, you know, it's probably what most people did was wrestle their friend, you know, but I had a different idea, which was to wrestle an enemy, which was this guy, Sean Flanagan, who he and I, you know, both had the Irish spelling of Sean. We were both in, you know, a pretty small class of kids and just kept running into each other throughout our entire childhoods. And it was always like the two Seans, and we didn't really like each other. Gotten a number of fist fights over the years. I remember distinctly the time that I ripped his gold crucifix off his neck and threw it back in his face. That was a classic moment in Sean Byron v. Sean Flanagan history.
That's a real insult to do in Boston to an Irishman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want to talk about thumbing your nose up at God. but we hated each other, but we also both loved pro wrestling. And when this Jell-O wrestling thing came around, like, we knew that we could, you know, probably like draw some heat. Like, people knew that we had this kind of weird rivalry, and we thought, like, hey, we're going to have the coolest match of this Jell-O wrestling thing. We can put us, you know, put aside our differences. We're not going to be punching each other square in the nose, but let's try and really, you know, do this Jell-O wrestling thing and see who can be the victor. And, you know, ultimately I did body slam him out of the ring, but it was a tough matchup, and I have fond memories of scrapping around there in the Jell-O with the guy. I think it was green Jell-O, and I remember smelling like Jell-O for like a day afterwards. Fun experience. So I kind of think schools should do it, although I can see why they wouldn't, because it's probably lawsuit fodder.
Yeah. And also the sexual connotations. Like, I mean, this is a thing that happens at titty bars, yeah. I think, predominantly.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. That is true, yeah. I don't think that there were any mixed gender matches that I remember. And this was a simpler time when two boys could wrestle around in Jell-O under a crowd of screaming adults, and there was nothing wrong about it.
Yeah, it was a simpler time. It was a better time, you know?
I can't be the only guy on the planet who participated in high school Jell-O wrestling. So please, if you're out there, call in, leave a junk mail for us. Let me know that I'm not crazy.
Yeah. If you're Sean Flanagan, call in. Let us know how it went.
Yeah. Rekindle the feud. I'll meet you out behind the schoolhouse in the alleyway.
Yeah. This is wild. I thought that I would have the weirdest mud wrestling story. The most... But yeah, that's a very weird thing for a school to do. This is where our tax dollars are going. This is why why I can't afford gas. Stuff like this. Some teachers are buying Jell-O for their kids to wrestle with it. My tax dollars.
This is why we need to elect Ron DeSantis as president, so he can put an end to this kind of shenanigans.
Well, as long as no men were wearing makeup, he doesn't care.
Fair.
That's really the only part he cares about. Everybody else could just be getting manhandled physically by adults, sexually, and he wouldn't care as long as there was no Mac makeup anywhere to be found.
So, speaking of weirdos, of you know, outsiders, I guess, like, this director of this Great American Mud Wrestle seems like kind of a weird dude, and seems like he's got an interest in weird dudes. Looks like he made about a dozen short films between 2016 and 2020, and seemingly all of them are about kind of local weirdos. One of them is a documentary called Bunny, about the goddess Bunny, who longtime listeners of the show will probably be familiar with. I guess he became close with the goddess Bunny before her death. There's also a 2020 documentary short, OG Black, The Snake Man, which is about a snake man who entertains pedestrians with his pet python named Butterfly. There's one called Stitch Face, about a scare actor who won the Andrew Carnegie Hero Medal for acts of extraordinary heroism and then passed away a week after filming. We got Taz the Toymaker, which features the story of Taz, a toymaker who created over 300 original action figures. So this guy likes weirdos, right?
Yeah. I'm interested in this one, The Boulevard Shredder. Guy who just shreds on Hollywood Boulevard.
I think one of his cohorts, Shelly the Burbank Bomber, will appear in the Great American Mud Wrestle. So maybe the Boulevard Shredder will be there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny that we just kind of randomly stumbled upon this guy who's made an entire career out of the weirdos we were talking about last week. So I feel like we got to end up watching more of this guy's stuff.
It looks like he hasn't made a movie since 2020. So I was kind of actually worried that he might have retired until I saw this on IMDb that looks like it says in March 2021, Hunter Ray Barker spent 24 hours in a tub of bean dip to support the Los Toros Mexican restaurant in Chatsworth. The viral stunt was featured on the Kelly Clarkson show, where Barker was awarded $1,000 for the stunt. And he also got a tattoo of the restaurant's logo while sitting in the bean dip.
That can't be hygienic.
No, certainly not. But it's cool, if you ask me. Yeah.
Yeah, respectable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he's still at it, because according to Letterboxd, what is this, 12 movies have come out between 2016 and 2020. So I think he's still around.
Yeah, well,
I would think.
2020, though, it's a few years ago now.
Well, that's true.
After such hopefully a prolific run for a bit there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good run. I guess maybe, you know, if he is retired, he deserves it. This is a good run here, but...
yeah, he's definitely made his mark.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into this movie. We're going to do an audio commentary for it.
Oh, man. This Boulevard Shredder, though, he's a guitar shredder. When I heard Boulevard Shredder, I'm thinking like a skateboarder, you know?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say you were thinking a guy that like helps you get rid of your documents that are like of a sensitive nature. I would appreciate that, too.
All right. Well.
We're going to do an audio commentary.
Yeah.
So only a 10-minute movie. It's on... We're watching the Vimeo version. Just Google Great American Mud Wrestle and it'll pop up. It's uploaded by the director himself. So if you're at home listening to this, pop this on. It'll be like watching it with us. If you're in your car or at the gym or whatever, you're very fancy for having things to do. you know, la-di-da. You don't hang around your house all day like some of us. But we'll explain the movie to you as we go. You don't feel like you necessarily have to be watching it to keep up with it. You can watch it later. We'll explain it to you, you know. So, all right, I guess you got it queued up, Sean Byron?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
All right, then let's do 1, 2, 3, and then a click to play this thing. And then we'll talk about it as it goes. We'll find out about this mud wrestle. I kind of skimmed through it, I think the title gives it away. It's a big American mud wrestle. That's what the plot is. But all right. 1, 2, 3, play. And it starts off with mud wrestling right away, as you might expect.
Got an action-packed montage up top here, it looks like.
Yeah. And there's the goddess.
Funny. Yeah. Also, I think I spied Goldman, who is a Hollywood Boulevard performer who wears gold makeup.
And this lady's, this nice somebody, old lady has gigantic boobs.
This lady's got tits bigger than her boxing gloves. It's cool.
Yeah. So are these Hollywood performers? Are they still allowed to do stuff out there? I've been out there a few times and it's usually just like Spider-Man and stuff. Are there still like cool weirdos out there or is it all just like Disney-fied now?
I think that they're still there, but I do feel like the peak of it was maybe pre-pandemic and that it's calmed down a little bit post-pandemic. Maybe not that they're not allowed to, just they're not making as much money because people probably don't want to get close to them. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that could be. So we've got Dog the Bounty Hunter here. Oh, I think that's the real dog.
I don't think I even saw him in the credits. Here's Goldman again.
Yeah.
Abominable creature.
I love the abominable creature. Let's see. We've got evil orc versus wedding somebody here.
So within a 9-minute span, I feel like we're going to be treated to clips from a lot of matches. And it's not clear to me. Is this a tournament format or what is the structure here?
I'm not sure. Maybe... This is a fault in the documentary storytelling because I don't think we know.
Oh, there's Joker. That guy has terrified me on the streets of Hollywood Boulevard before. He sleeps on a lounge chair that is like shredded to all hell. And he's terrifying.
He looked pretty scary.
Well, he looks even more scary now. It's been like 4 or 5 years. All right. We got some mud wrestling.
More mud wrestling.
This is mixed gender. This would not have gone down in my high school gymnasium.
Yeah. It's very progressive here. This is the progressive kind of mud wrestling.
Man, I'm looking at these credits and wondering when Hawaiian Willie Nelson is going to show up. Okay, we've got some interesting editing techniques now.
Yeah. They're going to give us seizures. I do like that people are just not having this cop stuff, even though he's a fake cool cop.
Seems like they've got that no police involvement policy.
Yeah, the best policy.
Is that one of the bowlings?
Yeah, the bowlings are both in this. I think that's one of them. Elvis versus Elvis, the ultimate showdown.
Wait a minute. Was that not one of the bowlings and instead was Lily Rose Depp?
Oh, that's possible, yeah.
Well, that's strange.
Star of Tusk and Yoga Hosers, Kevin Smith Classics.
I guess so. The problem with this movie is it makes me want to just go to this party more than actually sit and watch it.
Yeah, I know.
This is like cracking cold ones with the gold man.
Yeah, it seems like a very fun party. I imagine this is probably just somebody's backyard or something.
It's got to be. Yeah, in Simi Valley? Or no, Sun Valley.
Violence from the Russians. Who could have thought? Is there a whole mud wrestle scene? Is this a scene that happens? Like, are these mud wrestling parties happening every Friday night in somebody's backyard in LA and we're just missing out on this?
I mean, if it's occurring, nobody's informed me. You know, I know that there is still kind of a roller derby scene a little bit, but I haven't heard of a mud wrestling scene.
Yeah, there's roller derby scenes up here. They're very into it. Everybody up here is like very into rockabilly and roller derby. That's like the two predominant things that like people like up here.
Have you been to a roller derby?
I have. I've been to a couple. Yeah.
What's that like?
It's all right. I mean, I've got no fucking clue what the rules are. Like everybody skates around in like a little circle. But I mean, it's fun, you know, I don't know. Yeah. People like it. People go crazy.
They're like, punching each other and tripping each other and stuff or what?
Nah, it doesn't get that intense. Like sometimes people get tackled and like grabbed onto, but it's not. See, I thought it was going to be like the '90s where like somebody would get tackled and like they would flip over and like fall into like an alligator pit. You know, like the way it was like when I was a kid, but it's not really like that.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. It's still kind of fun though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're into the purity of the roller itself, you know what I mean? If you're a real skate head. I don't know what this guy's talking about, but I know that he's not wrestling right now.
I'm trying to figure out if that's his real hair or not.
Still waiting for the Crenshaw Cowboy to show up.
Yeah.
We've only got about 2.5 minutes left or something. Quickly running out of time for his appearance. Although this is a big crowd. He could just be anywhere in the background, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's a surprising variance in quality between these cuts of footage.
Yeah, it goes from being like very like 4K high def to sub VHS level. I guess that's an aesthetic choice of some kind.
Yeah.
A poor one, I would say.
I guess I prefer that over like trying to put some bogus VHS filter on the 4K footage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always bad.
Oh, the meanest girl in town match. Here's one of the bowlings, right?
Is this, I think so. It's possibly both of the bowlings.
That would make sense.
Hard to tell. Yeah.
They're dressed similar, so yeah, I'm guessing we got the bowling sisters.
Yeah. We met Kansas, I think, at that Corey Feldman show, I believe. She was there.
Did
with
we?
Hatless. Yeah, she was there with Hatless. I remember there being some sort of thing that Jackson told me where, like, you know, when Corey Feldman said my name on stage, the crowning achievement of my entire life, I think, like, somebody asked him about it and he thought that they were asking about Parker Bowling and that's why he was confused and said my name. I think Jackson told me that, or maybe that he said that on stage or something. I forget. It was a whirlwind of an evening, but I think that they were both there and or something like that. And,
what we do know is that your names, Parker Bowman and the Bowling Sisters, will be forever linked in history.
Yeah. It would only take a few changed words on Parker Bowling's IMDb page to make it seem like I directed that movie she directed.
Oh, by the way, that's Bill Moseley. I didn't recognize him until he started slashing somebody with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Did we lose Bill Moseley?
No, he's still around, I think.
Okay.
Sid Haig, though, maybe is who you're thinking of.
We did the lose other guy. Sid Haig. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The other sure thousand did. Corpses. Oh,
well,
that looked big as cute
as
hell.
As a Crenshaw cowboy film, this is a zero.
Yeah. Very little cowboy, if any.
I don't think I saw him. Maybe I was not paying close enough attention. But I did like the mud wrestling action.
Yeah.
I felt
a very entertaining 9 minutes. I feel like they could have stretched it out. I would like to watch a full-length version of this.
I felt an intense sense of jealousy. Special thanks to Mick Foley. That's cool.
All right.
Well, good job, Hunter Ray Barker. You made a movie.
Good movie. Well.
Okay. Now the question is, can I officially log that on Letterboxd? Does it count as a watch? Or does talking over it preclude me from doing it? That's something I'm going to have to wrestle with.
I already logged it, so.
Of course you did. You're logging movies
think it
over
counts.
There just when you think of watching them.
That, well, sometimes. I think it counts, though. Because, I mean, you know, what if, like, I mean, where do you draw the line? It's a slippery slope. I mean, what if we're watching a movie together and I go, hey, Sean, can I go get the water? Can I go get some water? It's like, now we're talking over that. What's the difference? Can we not log that movie now? You know,
we can log it as long as we start the movie back over from the very beginning.
Okay. That works. That's a good plan. Well, speaking of logging things from the very beginning, let's log a voicemail.
Oh,
from the very beginning. We got one here. It's everybody's favorite.
Welcome, Leah.
Sweet
man, you're so sweet. You're so sweet.
You're so sweet. One thing I love about Drunk Food Dinner and an extension Drunk Food Supper is we don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time. We can dance and party all night and drink some cherry wine.
Sweetman calling up to sing is my new favorite thing. It's like that time on the Brack Show when Zorak had that beautiful singing voice. You remember that episode?
Yeah.
It's a lot like that. I love it.
Nobody would have predicted this, you know, low those 500 years ago when Sweetman first started calling into the show and we were all babies, that the singing voice would be there. But turns out it was there the whole time.
Yeah, who knew? Great acoustics in that bathtub. It seems like this next voicemail, according to the transcript, may involve somebody taking other options, pursuing Ooh. Other options. So let's find out what this person has to say.
Hey guys, this is me, Rob, and I want to thank you for your interest in our Aqua Teen Forever Plantasm movie, but I'm going to need to ask you to remove it from your website, or me and the other guys are going to have to pursue other options. Capiche? Well, bye.
Oh.
I didn't mean to blow the punchline. I didn't see that it actually said that. I just saw that they wanted us to remove something from our website, and I did not know that it was going to be Meatwad. but I'm glad that it was.
Nobody ever expects Meatwad. That's the element of surprise is one of his greatest advantages.
It's true. And that
and his meaty texture.
Yeah, turning into hot dog.
Well, and igloo. Certainly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Meatwad. We'll remove that episode as soon as possible. Well, I think that wraps it up for all this first segment stuff. I think we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the movie Badlands, which everybody recognizes as being one of the best movies of all time. So stick around.
It's a
pretty little. I love you. So I stroke it. I pet it.
JumpForYouTube.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. JumpForYouTube.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website.
I get all excited.
Yeah, I love my little naughty fat. You're naughty.
The world's oldest and sexiest website is JumpForYouTube.com.
And I take my naughty fat.
The world's oldest and sexiest website is JumpForYouTube.com.
Oh, I killed her!
We hid out in the wilderness, down by a river in a grove of cottonwoods. It being the flood season, we built our house in the trees with tamarisk walls and willows laid side by side to make a floor. There wasn't a plant in the forest that didn't come in handy. A huge network of tunnels under the forest floor, and our first order of business every morning was to decide on a new password for the day. Now and then we'd sneak out at night and steal a chicken or a bunch of corn or some melons from a melon patch. Mostly though, we just lay on our backs and stared at the clouds, and sometimes it was like being in a big marble hall, the way we talked in low voices and heard the tiniest sound. They hadn't found but one set of bones in the ashes of the house, so we knew they'd be looking for us. Kit made sure we'd be prepared. He gave me lectures on how a gun works, how to take it apart and put it back together again, in case I had to carry on without him. He said that if the devil came at me, I could shoot him with a gun. One day I carried 30 pounds of wood a distance of 5 miles. Another day, while hiding in the forest, I covered my eyes with makeup to see how they'd come out.
Welcome back to Junk Food Supper. Our movie this week is going to be Badlands from 1973. This is the debut film from one of the more elusive members of the new Hollywood scene of the 1970s, Terrence Malick. who wrote, directed, and self-produced this at the age of 30. And it's a movie about two star-crossed lovers of sorts, I guess. Martin Sheen plays Kit Carruthers, a 25-year-old garbage collector in 1950s South Dakota. He's sort of an angry young dude, sort of a greaser. Looks kind of like James Dean, but has a definite violent streak to him. And Sissy Spacek plays Holly Sargis, a 15-year-old dreamer in a dead-end town there in South Dakota. She's lost her mom to pneumonia, doesn't get along well with her dad, played here by Warren Oates, and is maybe looking for a way out of this dead-end small town. Things come to a head pretty early on in the movie when Martin Sheen loses his job and decides to run off with Spacek. And when Warren Oates tells him to get the fuck out of his house, Sheen just shoots and kills him right there in the living room. And then the two decide almost on a whim that they'll have to run from the law, no matter who gets in their way, which begins their adventure, I guess you'd call it, even though it's sort of an anti-adventure. Wherein they drive from place to place around the desolate Midwest, trying to blend in and avoid cops and bounty hunters, which for a while leads to these cops and bounty hunters getting blown away, you know, like glass bottles lined up on an old wooden fence. And so it sort of becomes a question of how long they can maintain this tumultuous situation. And that's basically it. There's not a lot of twists or turns. Not a ton of characters in this. It's pretty bare bones. It's just kind of a murder spree sort of a flick. And to be honest, I too was like you, Bowman, not that long ago. You know, I had heard of these Terrence Malicks. I had wanted to get around to them for a while. And then it was exactly 2 years ago today, actually, that I saw that Badlands had showed up on either HBO or Criterion. And so I gave it a whirl, and I loved it. And then pretty recently, within the past couple of weeks, I saw Days of Heaven, which was Terrence Malick's follow-up film. And I love that, too, which, you know, reinforced my idea that Bowman should see Badlands. And since my aim this week is to try and find a new Bowman-approved five-star flick, that was my intent. We talked about it a little bit last week. I'm trying to find a movie that Bowman's never seen before that he's going to rate 5 stars on Letterboxd. I figured, you know, we should see this one for the show because I thought it might be that movie. And I guess what I like most about this movie is just kind of the way that Malick handles the overall tone. You know, you got this quiet 1950s serenity. You know, you can feel this mild sense of like post-war bliss where, you know, things are quiet in these quaint little nondescript suburban neighborhoods. And that, you know, things are quiet and people like it that way, you know, and you've got these beautiful shots of nature and it just feels like there is a peace in the world. But then things can just turn on a dime very suddenly and be completely upended in a second, you know, as soon as the wrong person arrives in town, you know, that person here being Martin Sheen. And you really do get like this big sense of disconnect with, you know, this Martin Sheen character, who he is and how he sees the world and what this world is that he lives in. And you can fully buy that this idyllic world is not the kind of world that Sheen wants to live in or that he could ever thrive in. And so, you know, the two lead actors in this really do create this sense of us versus the world that I think is pretty captivating. And they do it while being completely natural, you know, throughout the entire movie. It never feels forced or fake or actory. I guess if I had to pick my favorite performance in this is Sissy Spacek, who appears in this movie a few years before Carrie and had really only done just a small amount of film work before this. She's doing a lot of narration in this as well throughout the entire picture. And I think her narration in this single-handedly disproves that notion that narration is a bad idea in movies because it's so beautiful. It's beautifully written. It's beautifully performed and recorded. The way that they record it, actually, it feels like it's really like close mic'd or something, and it has this kind of ASMR effect. And it's funny, too, the narration. Like, there's this part in the movie where, you know, Sheen's already killed like half a dozen people across several incidents. And in the narration, Sissy Spacek just says, very casually, she says, like, Kit was the most trigger happy person I'd ever met. And it's, there's just a lot of funny little lines like that. And I feel like a lot of that narration was inspirational on movies like Natural Born Killers. You know, I feel like you could hear Mallory Knox saying some of these same lines, perhaps.
Yeah. And True Romance, 100% as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that Tarantino was a huge fan of this, obviously. And, you know, Martin Sheen was fairly young as well when he made this. You know, he was not quite as new to the scene as Sissy Spacek. You know, I think he'd been working in films for a few years longer, but hadn't really had a breakout success, was really more of a TV star at this point in time. And it's great that they found him for this role because, you know, despite being, you know, unquestionably a scumbag from the get-go, so much so that it should be obvious to even a 15-year-old Sissy Spacek, there's still something like undeniably attractive about the guy. I mean, he just looks so cool in this. Like, and I've never been a fan of denim on denim, and maybe that's just because I grew up in the Jay Leno era, but dude makes it work in this. And, you know, as the movie goes on, he does start to kind of lose his cool, I guess lose his sheen, you might say, where those eyes start to become a little bit more bloodshot. His energy becomes more kind of twitchy and manic, and you can feel him kind of falling apart at the seams. You know, as a movie, I think it's fairly ahead of its time, certainly in terms of its content. I mean, not that we didn't have any movies before this that were focused on spree killers, but I think outside of like Bonnie and Clyde, they were generally pretty low budget exploitation affairs, things like The Thrill Killers. But here you've got a film that, you know, bridges the gap between art house and exploitation. You know, I think this is a movie that would appeal to both extremes of the audience, you know, the art house crowd and the exploitation crowd, if maybe potentially alienating some of that mainstream audience in the middle. But you got to love that kind of audacity. You got to love, you know, his approach at financing this, which was kind of akin to what the Coens and Sam Raimi would be doing decades later. Dude, you know, went around and knocked on doors and solicited dentists and doctors and stuff and put together the money. You know, I think half of this came through his efforts there, and he did have a producing partner. But, you know, guy made this happen, and I think that's impressive. But I will say, you know, maybe don't watch this movie while eating or while you're trying to relax during entertainment, because there is some grim stuff in this. Like, one of the very first shots of the movie is a dead dog on the side of the road. And Martin Sheen yells over to his coworker on the garbage truck, "I'll give you a dollar to eat this dead collie." And that's kind of the tone of this movie. I think not long after that, there's a scene at which Warren Oates shoots Sissy Spacek's dog dead as like a punishment, and it happens on screen pretty much. That's kind of gnarly. There's other scenes featuring dead cows, dead fish, and maybe even some other dead animals. I can't remember if William Shatner showed up to stomp on any tarantulas. He might have. And it's also possible that some people might find this movie just kind of in bad taste overall, and that it sort of humanizes this killer that Martin Sheen plays. In my mind, I don't feel like it exonerates him whatsoever, but it does kind of humanize him in a way that might make you feel uncomfortable. But I think it is all done with a sense of care. And I think there's some keen observations here. Like, there's a bit at the end where even the police are kind of fascinated by Sheen's character. You know, they're kind of in awe of this killer. And to me, that scene felt like kind of a critique of America's fascination with, you know, true crime. Anyhow, I guess it is a bit of a bummer of a movie, but I also think when you watch this, it doesn't feel quite as heavy as you might expect based on, you know, the things I've described about it. More than anything, you know, when I watch this, I'm just kind of impressed by all these young people with fairly minimal experience turning in incredible work, just nailing this naturalistic, you know, weird adventure film that looks great and never feels false. So, you know, as you know, I am famously not a follower of Parker Bowman on Letterboxd, so I truly don't know if I've hit the mark here. So I guess I have to turn it over now. And please, Mr. Bowman, tell me what you thought of this movie. And then at the end, tell me how you logged it on Letterboxd.
Well, I'll jump ahead. I've logged it on Letterboxd, but I didn't put in a star rating. So
okay, I see.
Not yet, anyway. That's how I've been doing the junk food supper movies. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. So I'll be giving it a star rating later. But yeah, like you said, I have not seen this, but I've been very intrigued because I know that it's a thing that a lot of the folks I like. Just people I know, and then also, like you said, it seems like Tarantino loves this. Is the voiceover very similar to the voiceover in True Romance, which is in my top five or whatever favorite movies ever. But the theme song from True Romance is a very intentional and clear homage to the theme song from this. So when that theme song hit at the 1 second mark of this, I did not realize that, you know, loving True Romance for the last 30 years or whatever, that was the case. So when the theme song hit, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. They're already playing the True Romance theme. This is wonderful. Martin Sheen is cool. He's very good in this. People keep telling him that he looks like James Dean, which he does. He has, for a while, he has like kind of a coolness to him that you kind of get behind. The characters all do in this, like you said, spoiler alert, once he's caught at the end, he is giving out souvenirs to the cops, like pens and combs and stuff like this. And they're all like hanging on his every word, which is definitely a critique of, you know, people's love of true crime at the time, which was probably a big thing. Like the two characters in this are based on real killers. And then obviously this comes in the wake of Bonnie and Clyde, which is based on real killers, although that happened further in the past. The killers that the Badlands characters are based on, like, I think it happened like the year before or something. So it was probably pretty fresh in people's minds. He's got this coolness about him for a bit. He kind of seems like the kind of guy you would hang out with and maybe like a little bit and maybe not like, like I feel like I've known guys who have probably tried to pay me a dollar to eat a dead collie before in my life, you know? So like he feels kind of like a real scumbag that you might know in that way, who's like kind of a scumbag, but he's like a real cool guy. So you hang around and put up with his shit. And then he kind of turns a corner into being like a not fun scumbag when it's like, cause he's hitting on Sissy Spacek and everything like this. And not to watch this movie with 2023 eyes or anything like that, but like she's 15. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, he's got like a job. He collects garbage. Maybe he's like 18 or 19. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is kind of a gray, you know, not even a gray area, but like this is kind of rough a little bit. But then it's revealed he's 25. And it's like, that's too much. Even for being in the 50s in South Dakota, that's too much. So, my sensitive 2023 eyes, I was like, ugh, maybe this guy's not cool anymore at all.
Well, I think another clue that he's not cool is the fact that he just flies off the handle and starts murdering people. I mean, you're not supposed to be rooting for this guy.
I can forgive a couple of murders.
Okay.
But putting it in a 15-year-old, that's a little bit different. I can't forgive that. Killing people is fine. Killing people is cool. But, that's one thing. Like, I mean, are you supposed to be rooting for people? I feel like when you watch Bonnie and Clyde, you root for Bonnie and Clyde, even though they're bad. Like in this movie, right, are you supposed to be rooting for these two crazy kids to get to Canada or not?
I don't think so. I think this is kind of, in some sense, a reaction to Bonnie and Clyde, where I think that Malick is trying to illustrate that our obsession with true crime or our idolization of these people doesn't really line up with the reality of, you know, what they went through or what they did. Like when you see it, you know, absent of all the Hollywood gloss and, you know, didactic music that's telling you to feel a certain way or, you know, Hollywood style editing. Like when you just see it kind of stripped down like this, you realize like, oh no, this guy's a scumbag and this poor girl was manipulated and there's nothing here to celebrate, but it's interesting to witness at the same time.
Yeah, it does sort of feel like, yeah, like a true neutral version of that, where like he's, by stripping it down so much, making it like such a minimalist movie. yeah, it does sort of feel like the true neutral version. Like it's not a celebration like Bonnie and Clyde, but it's also not, like, I don't feel like he's like damning these people too much. He's just kind of putting them out there, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So I enjoy that about it. Like, I feel like if it went too hard, I mean, I guess I was kind of thinking about it, you know, because I saw people on Letterboxd, they were like, oh, you know, I really, you know, I was, you know, rooting for these guys. And so maybe that kind of confused me a little bit going into it. But yeah, definitely like in the movie, you're not necessarily supposed to root for them, but. You know,
I think you might be rooting for things to get under control. You know what I mean? Where this is a movie where things are kind of spiraling. And as a viewer, like that's creating anxiety where like your wish is like, I hope things resolve okay. Like maybe they can just stop murdering and go serve some time or something. But
yeah. Or at least stop murdering. Like, you know, like the dad's obviously a prick. He killed a dog. He deserves to die. And like those bounty hunters, I mean, you know, they're basically cops. So maybe they deserve it. Although Martin Sheen says that if they were cops, he wouldn't have done it, which I didn't respect. That's another reason I kind of didn't like it. but even then, like, is it like for sure? Like, was he lying? Like, were those guys just like hunters or something? Like, were they actually bounty hunters? Do we know? Or like, did I miss it? Or like,
I don't think that we know. And I think a lot of that stuff that is given to us in narration from Sissy Spacek, like, I think we're supposed to be skeptical of, because I think the idea is she's so naive and gullible that she just believes anything that he says. And he's full of all these wild, you know, ideas and stories, you know, some of which are true and some of which aren't.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of got the impression that he was making that stuff up and that those guys were just normal ass dudes that he felt like murdering. Another reason I did not like this guy is like when he first meets Sissy Spacek, he's like, oh, you know, why don't you come walk with me? And she's like, why would I do that? And he's like, well, I got a lot to talk about. You know, it's sad that when people don't have things on their mind, and he's like very like, you know, high on himself. But then when they do go for a walk, he points out that somebody left a bag on the ground. That's like the most interesting thing he had to say. And I get that, like, you know, that's on purpose to show that he's kind of not the brightest guy or not the most talkative guy, but it really put me on his bad side. I really did not care for that. There's a scene where he's working one of his many jobs and he steps on a dead cow, which I thought was like, I love that shot. This is like a real quick thing. Like, I love it because they were probably just shooting at this dairy and there just happened to be a dead cow, because there often are when you're at a dairy. And so somebody just got the idea, why don't you walk over this thing? So you're utilizing what you found to get good production value, i.e. a dead cow. And then also it shows just how bored this guy is, like how little he cares about anything, or how little he cares about something that's dead or had just died. And it also shows that he's bored, so bored that he'll step on a dead cow just to, you know, kill 2 seconds of time. And that's what that's what all this movie is. It's just these two guys, like these two kids just being so bored. They really just want to kill time. Like, it seems like that, you know, they're out in the middle of nowhere. They've got nothing else to do. Might as well kill people and drive around. And I like that. I often like movies about bored people. So that's kind of what I like most about it. And then obviously the cinematography and like just showing these big barren places kind of works with that as well. I like when there's this sequence near the end where like everything's just like going to shit. Like, it's getting really bad. Like, they're out of money. They're almost out of gas. And they talk about how they had to eat salt grass that they found that tasted like cabbage just to survive, like that they pulled out of the literal ground. And I like that. I thought that was like, I'd imagine, you know, if you're on the lam back in these old days, you probably had to do that. Like, yeah, you're probably 100, 200 miles between towns and, you know, especially like, you know, you're not too far removed from like the Dust Bowl and people, you know, having to like load up wagons with their 13 kids and go east. I bet there was a lot of people eating grass along the way.
That's also the section of the movie where she talks about in the narration of for gas for their Cadillac that they're driving cross country, that they have to stop at like these pipes on the pipeline where they can get what is called drip gas, I think they call it, where it's like this kind of runoff that occurs where like the pipes leak and they can siphon off a little bit, which to me sounds completely bogus and like just something that you made up to explain the fact that they were driving this car, you know, cross country without gas stations, but also is kind of like whimsical in a way that I think is really charming. This concept of drip gas.
Yeah. I like it too. I don't know how real it is. But yeah, I like that, you know, if you're just driving literally, like they're not even on roads near the end of this, they're just driving through fields and, like agriculture land and stuff near the end. And yeah, like the idea that there's just like a tank out in the middle of nowhere that you can maybe get, you know, 3 drops of gas literally out of it. I like that. There's a few points in the movie where Martin Sheen uses the machine from Evil Dead Rise to record a record, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. The, what is it called? It's, the voiceograph. I wrote it down.
Okay.
The voiceograph, which actually was a plot element in that Brighton Rock film noir that I watched, a major plot element in that movie, actually.
How odd. I like that. I like that very conveniently you can use one of those to get the cops off your trail.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that played out the way that he thought, you know, where it's like maybe you should have put that record a little bit further away from the burning house, bro.
True. That is true. Yeah, so I like this movie. I like it a good amount, I will say, because of the vibes. I like the cinematography. I like the vibes. I like seeing the Old West in such a way. I don't care for these characters. That's kind of the point.
These kids are pieces of shit.
But all these kids are pieces of shit. Like, he's a scumbag. I hope, like, the whole time I was just hoping somebody would shoot him in the face.
Oh.
And she's literally nothing. And while that's the point of the movie to some degree, trying to accurately depict the two kinds of losers who would do such a thing as this, it's not incredibly compelling to watch.
What the fuck?
No, I mean, do you, there's really nothing to Sissy Spacek's character, right? I mean, am I crazy here?
To the character, yeah, not that much. To her performance, I mean, I think it is a pretty incredible performance.
Yeah. I do like the scene where they dance together. That's the scene where I liked her most. Like, well, that whole scene where, like, they've gone out into the woods and they've made their little treehouse. I love that scene because it's like, A, they do, like, the little dance to the Dirty Dancing song together. And, like, they're, like, literally just, like, playing house. Like, they build, like, a treehouse. And it's like, they're, you know, like, I mean, she's 16, so it's what she would be doing. Like, I mean, like, she's literally playing house. But he's, you know, married her. So it's like, to him, it's like a... like their house where they're going to be a family. And to her, it just seems like she's playing make-believe in this treehouse that they've built. So I that scene rules. But yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, the vibes of this, the vibes and the feeling and everything is like A+. The characters are like a C+. But I get that, like, that's not the point. Like the point, like, I don't know. Maybe people watch this and they like really love these characters or something. But you know, like, I love movies about bored psychos. Like, this should, like,
yeah. The reason I picked this was because I know you like Natural Born Killers. Mm-hmm. I know you like True Romance. I know you like American Psycho. I feel like this is kind of a, you know, it's a precedent for a lot of that stuff.
100%. It should be an A+ because I love psychos who are bored. That's one of my favorite things. But usually they're a little, like, Mickey is a lot more charismatic than this guy. Patrick Bateman, he at least knows a lot about fashion, you know, and music. Whereas this guy is just kind of annoying. So it's hard to fully get behind them. So when it comes time to rate this on Letterboxd, I will not be rating it 5 stars. I will be rating it 4 stars, Sean Byrne.
Son of a bitch.
But I like it a great deal. And it's a very good, well-informed idea of what I would give 5 stars because it hits all of my stuff that I like.
Oh, hell yeah.
but it just doesn't go all the way for me.
Okay. All right. Well, I feel like I was on the right track then. I feel like I smelled blood in the water. And in fact, there was a bleeding bowman in there, but he just like didn't fully drown, I guess, or whatever this analogy would be.
It's very possible that I'll watch this in a year and like it more. Like once I've gotten over the fact, like once I like go in knowing that like I'm going to think that Martin Sheen sucks and is a piece of shit and should die, like then I may like it more. Cause like I was expecting to be like, rooting for these guys. And so when I didn't, maybe that was a little too jarring for my brain, but so I imagine I will like this more in the future next time I watch it. But, if that's any consolation.
Yeah, for me on a second watch, you know, knowing the shape of it coming in, it held up. I mean, I wouldn't say I liked it any more or less. It felt like I loved it the first time and I loved it the second time. So it is possible that you might enjoy it more. I would say also check out Days of Heaven. It's very much in this vein, similar tone, and really incredible.
That sounds good.
Got to be impressed by the fact that this guy made this movie though at age 30 with really no Hollywood experience.
Yeah. And I mean, that's for the better. I liked it. It feels almost like a documentary at times. And if he had, done a couple Hollywood movies before this, it probably would feel a lot more glossy to its detriment. But,
yeah. Well, I think we're fast approaching some listeners' quote unquote favorite part of the show. That's what I've heard from some people online. And that is the selection for next week's pick.
Yeah, so I'm going to jump off of your idea here. You wanted to pick a movie that you thought maybe I would give 5 stars to called Badlands. And so I want to jump off from what you've picked to pick my movie. So I will be choosing Bad Grandpa.
Oh, my goodness.
JK.
I thought we were going in a direction of you're going to pick a movie with good in the title that I'll think is bad, like Good Omens or something.
JK. I'm going to follow your lead. I'm going to pick a movie that I think you will give 5 stars to. I got a list going on Letterboxd. It's a good thing you don't follow me. I got a list of potential 5-star Sean Byrne movies. And this is one that I've been wanting to pick for a long time on the Junk Food Dinner and just never got around to it. But now that I'm going to try to do a 5-star Sean Byrne movie, I think it's the right time. And that's a movie called Don't Look Now.
Oh!
From 1973, directed by Nicholas Roeg. The caveat to this is that it's... Do you know anything about this movie?
I know that there's some kind of a twist, but I don't know what the twist is. This is a movie that I thought that I had seen for a long time, and then I realized that it was a completely different movie that I had seen that was not this at all. So I don't know much.
Well, don't look it up. Don't Google it between now and when you watch it, because
I won't
much
look
like
now.
Yeah, don't look now, because much like Psycho, if you like even Google this, you're going to get the spoiler. But this is a movie. Listen, when did I see this for the first time? According to Letterboxd, I first saw this in 2016. And at the time, I rated it 3.5 stars. But I've thought about this movie every single day since then. So when I go to watch it this week, I will 100% be giving it 5 stars, I'm sure. So it's possible that that will be your experience as well, because it's a movie that, like, you kind of need to see more than once to really fully appreciate it, I imagine. So maybe that will work against me here in terms of getting you your 5 stars, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. So if you go back to it in 10 years and give it 5 stars, I'll take that as a W. But I think that this is, like, aggressively up your alley. I will be very shocked. Although I thought that way about Death Game and Funny Games as well. And those didn't work out for me. So we'll see how this goes. But I think this is much, much different than those movies. I think this will be aggressively up your alley. Even if you don't give it 5 stars, I will be shocked if you don't like this movie.
People compare this to David Lynch.
I think that's accurate. Yeah, that's so very accurate. Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
This has all, well, I love David Lynch's comedy, but, like, of the stuff that David Lynch does in terms of, like, mystery and drama and, like, a foreboding, ominous, oppressive atmosphere, like that stuff, which I think you like, this movie does that stuff, like, very, very Lynchian and very perfectly.
Oh, that David Lynch. No one likes him.
I like David Lynch. I've got all of his out-of-print records. So, don't look now.
I won't.
It's going to be a Sean Byron five-star movie.
I hope so. I could really use it. You know that? I've been looking for a good 5-star.
Well, I think this is going to be it. I got a couple more on my list. If this fails, we'll start back at square one. But I think this one's up your alley.
I think we should, theme months notwithstanding, which certainly there will be some theme months. There's going to be Schlocktober. Maybe there might be a by September. Who knows? But theme months notwithstanding, I like the idea of trying to find this 5-star Bowman pick with my picks, at least until I hit one, you know? Then maybe I'll be looking for a half-star Bowman pick.
Well, you've got a few of those already.
Those seem to be a little bit easier for me to locate.
Yeah. Well, it happens. It happens. You know, but
not this week. You enjoyed Badlands. You're glad that you saw it. You respect its tenacity, its independent spirit.
Yep.
Its score. Its scrappy nature.
I do. I like it so much. I'm going back in. 4 stars for Badlands right now. Everybody can see it. It's public. Oh, also, according to my research.
Oh, yeah.
The two kids underneath the streetlight when Martin Sheen looks like out the window of wherever they are near the beginning. Those two kids are Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez.
Hmm. So you're telling me this is where Charlie Sheen got his whole personality from?
Basically, yes. Also,
this movie.
Martin Sheen in this movie looks like, if you fused Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez into one person, like, it is amazing how he looks like both of them at the same time in this. He's like just the perfect age to do that.
Who knew that, you know, it'd be such a handsome combo?
Yeah.
I guess we all knew the whole time.
True. Also, Martin Sheen's from Dayton, Ohio, so.
Just point that out. Yeah.
Yeah, we see you.
Speaking of seeing things, I guess we have now seen Badlands and we've, you know, picked a movie that we're going to see next week. So I think that may be pretty much all we've got on offer for this podcast for this week. And unless you had some crazy sidebar that you wanted to introduce here at the very last moment of the podcast, Bowman, which I'll give you that opportunity if you want it.
Okay. I actually do have something I wanted to say here at the bottom of the show.
All right, I'll take it. As we always say at the end, go check out our stuff online. Go to junkfooddinner.com. That's where you can get back episodes of Junk Food Dinner and Junk Food Supper. Send us an email at jftpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail at some number, 347-746-5865. I think so.
Maybe.
Is that right? Is that right?
I don't know.
Leave us a voicemail at...
It starts with a 7, doesn't it?
Is it 746? No, I had it right.
Oh, okay.
Leave us a voicemail at 347-746-5865. That's 347-746-JUNK. We got the word junk in there for you so you can remember it more easily. Or just add it to your phone and then you don't have to memorize it ever. We're on some of the social medias. We're on patreon.com/junkfooddinner. Go send us a few bucks and get some bonus content, which we're still doing. So I recommend you do all of those things. And until next week, this is your friend, Sen Biro, for your other friend, Perky Beantown Bowman, saying keep washing them dishes.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, where's my free TV?